Spectrum Business works with small businesses nationwide, so we know that running your own business means doing it all. Marketing, sales, inventory, customer service, and more. Spectrum One for Business helps you keep it all connected for just $49.99 a month. Get fast, reliable internet, advanced Wi-Fi with Security Shield, and a free mobile line for one low price. Stay connected and do it all with Spectrum One for Business. Only $49.99 a month. Go to spectrum.com/business to learn more. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas. Whoa,
welcome to this brunch edition of the Completely Unnecessary Podcast. It is Tuesday, springtime, March 27th, 2018, alongside barely awake Ian Ferguson.
I'm here.
I'm back on tree. We got a lot of fun stuff going on to talk about this time in the world of gaming, retro and modern, and in the world of bankruptcies, in the world of wrestlers returning, thankfully, after 2 years of retirement. KB Toys might be making a comeback. Don't call it a comeback. Handheld game emulation. More info on the Atari box with a new name, a new game grading service, Street Fighter series in development. Pat's in a midlife crisis. And your Q&A. So, Ian, what's going on in your life?
Oh, you know, stuff. Watched a lot of basketball recently.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You're getting into that.
It's been good.
Buffalo got knocked out?
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, the fact that they even made it was pretty great. And then the fact they made it to the second round.
Is that amazing?
Was fantastic.
That means they had an upset and they got there?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of upsets for Buffalo to do anything, really. In anything. Not just
in anything.
In any endeavor. In anything that Buffalo does positively, that's an upset. So that's fantastic.
Okay.
Syracuse has been knocked out, which is unfortunate. That's my team.
My boy Blue.
But yeah, for the first time in years, I've actually had a chance to watch a large chunk. I got to watch all of round one and round two. I got to watch at least a day's worth of the Sweet 16. I didn't get to watch any of the Elite 8.
Sweet 16!
But it's been fun. So that was cool. I went up to WonderCon on Sunday with Vani.
How was that?
Just for a day. I actually really enjoyed it. It's so nice.
A little less hectic. But still hectic at this point, but less hectic than San Diego.
Way less hectic. Actually, what was cool was I think the most hectic area was Artist Alley.
Oh,
so
really?
Lots of people were there for the artists and for comics. There was really no media. There was no like TV station presence. There was no movie presence. There was no video game company presence. It was just vendors and comics, for the most part, small press. So it was a lot of fun. I got that X-Men Age of Apocalypse omnibus for $50. Normally goes for like $130.
That's the story from, what is it, the late 80s, early 90s?
It's from the early 90s.
Early 90s.
It's the classic,
sure,
you know, alternate universe.
It comes
story.
A wrecked house and yeah.
Yeah. So that was neat, and yeah, it was a good time. So that's what I've been up to.
I still don't have, you can tell my disarray because behind you I still don't have games on the shelf there. I'm trying to figure out what to put on the shelves besides the NES and Sega Master System, some of the Genesis there, but I'll get there. This is a weird week, not just because of this being around here, and it's like maybe you're seeing slight improvements to this, probably not, since the last 2 weeks you've seen nothing in my life, but now I'm in a midlife crisis, according to a nice Wired profile about me, written by Justin Heckert. So before we get any further, Justin did not pick the clickbaity title at Wired.com. So it's called The Nintendo King and the Midlife Crisis.
It's good, because I like Justin, and it's a good article. I actually like the article very well, very much.
Pat Contry has made it.
The title is rough.
His synopsis, Pat Contry has made a career out of his YouTube videos about all things Nintendo. But as he closes in on 40, the NES Punk is struggling to... Struggling to imagine what things beyond that? Is that what that says? It's cut off on the Twitter there. All right. Well, anyway, read the article. it's not called, it doesn't, there's no midlife crisis reference in the print version, at least.
Yeah.
It makes me seem like I'm a madman because of that. But it basically delves into the mindset of me as I get older. The NES Punk character is 10 years old. The NES is the backdrop to my hobby for 20 years, but also part of my career. And it's a nice article. It's a nice profile. It seems compressed. It's a little rushed. They cut out like 500 words. But yeah, what did you think about it? Was it interesting to learn about me? Do you know anything about any from the? Is there anything from the article you didn't know about me or no?
No.
You said that with such sort of like disdain. No, I knew all that.
It was like reading the back of a cereal box. I've read 100 times before as I'm sitting there eating my breakfast.
What would be my giveaway item, though? Would I have a giveaway item? like a random NES 4-score sealed above you?
Yeah. Maybe an M82.
But I'm honored that I was chosen in this, the issue, I think it's the age issue. So they profile people in different age groups, and I'm in the 27 to 54 age group. I believe.
Cool.
So I'm glad that I'm like a little closer to the 27 still at this point.
Yeah.
The 54.
Well, I think, but Justin did a fantastic job writing it. So.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't want to delve in too much. You know, check it out. I tweeted it out. I think you're allowed a certain number of Wired articles per month before you have to subscribe. So if you've read Wired a lot, you probably subscribed. If not, just read this one before you read the other ones, and then you can decide if you want to start. Or go to your local Barnes & Noble or local bookstore and buy the print version. You can, you know, you can look at my weird-ass hair in the one picture. Call my hair foppish.
I agreed. I agree. In that one picture, you look kind of like an ageless, timeless British pop star.
In which one? The picture of me
in front of the
shelf?
Yes.
I was kind of not disappointed they used that photo. There was real photographers here for like 2 hours.
I can tell.
What do you mean you can tell? It made me look good for once.
Mm-hmm.
But they showed up.
Also, you told me.
Okay. Well, let's pretend for the audience that you don't know about this stuff. We're only doing a podcast.
This is brand new to me.
Yeah. Professional podcast, everyone. So they did pictures. And I'm glad that for the print version, I don't think they're going to use the strange one of me outside with the Donkey Kong. Stuff Donkey Kong, but they're using the other two.
That's sad.
With my nice Spy Hunter shirt, and then the me at the podcasting booth. And then you got a quote in there.
I did.
So you don't know what I do for fun, apparently.
Not lately, no. I mean, honestly, I could have said movies, but I mean, like, who doesn't go to the fucking movies?
Who doesn't watch a good Marvel yarn at this point, right? Yeah, so, and just to clear things up, it's not like the NES Punk character is dead and gone right now, but it's thinking
he's
about
just dead inside right dead now.
I mean, I just had one come out a few months ago, and I if it wasn't for the move, I probably would have done another one. And I don't know how I even got that one out with the move, to be honest.
I have no clue.
It was like the famous story. Sometimes I get this will to kill myself. Like when I was moving from New Jersey to California, 3 days before the move, I filmed an NES Punk video 3 days before.
It's that was stupid.
That was very stupid. That was the M82 for the win video, by the way. I filmed that in the midst of moving across the country and packing shit. Like, it was insane that I did that 3 or 4 days before. It was close. Yeah. So anything besides that, you know, any comments, anything, you know, links to a certain NES guidebook, calls it a Bible. Let's quote this. It suffocated him, but turned into a surprise hit. That is a very good term for what the book did to my life. It suffocated me. That's a very astute wordplay for there. It suffocated me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So check it out. Maybe this will finally qualify me for a Wikipedia article. Because in the past, I remember because I do a Google alert sometimes set. And it was up there. And then it was not just marked for deletion. My Wikipedia page was marked for speedy deletion. Like it was like the like, get this the fuck off Wikipedia. I guess there's regular size word and get this the hell off Wikipedia sort of stuff. I think that's interesting. That's all.
Ow.
But the story of me crying about Zelda 2, because it wasn't arriving from the Sears catalog, absolutely true. But that's the, you know, that was a chip shortage that helped out there.
Yeah.
unfortunately. So, all right. Anything else going on in our lives that are important? Sea of Thieves, real quick. What the fuck's up with this game? Why is it getting so much coverage?
I think because everyone was trying to find the game inside of it.
I didn't see a lot of build-up to it, like these other huge games that come out. Then all of a sudden, I see this. Maybe I'm not in the know. Was there a lot of buzz around this game?
It was Xbox One exclusive, so being one of the few, I would say, like
one of the few exclusives.
One of the few exclusives. If you're not playing Xbox One regularly, you might not know about it. Two, it's big because it was it's a rare title. So it was like one of the,
that's what it is.
It was one of the first big like original properties they've been working on in a while.
Everything rare must be you know, pushed, I guess, or acknowledged.
Well, I mean, it's their big first, their second party.
Second party,
yeah, it's their big second party developer. So I think people really wanted it to be something, and I think the idea of the game sounds really great.
What's the idea, real quick?
Well, the idea of the game was supposed to be, you know, you get multiple people to play with you and you all man a pirate ship.
Sure.
And you seafare around and dude, I can't talk right now, you know this. But you seafare around and you sail and you
fight, you loot.
You fight and you get treasure
and
stuff
like
that. Capture
ships maybe, you discover, you go little islands, you get
up. Yeah, but from what I understand, there's only like one upgrade to your ship and it's cosmetic only.
Well, that sounds great.
There's no NPCs or anything.
Oh, that sounds fantastic.
On the islands. There's lots of griefing when it comes to the multiplayer.
So people are just ruining it for others. Just,
yeah. No. And I guess, you know,
it's not a single player experience at all, right? You have to really do multiplayer.
From what I understand, yes, multiplayer is basically unavoidable in it. So, it kind of sounds like a No Man's Sky situation, but magnified
because that at least there was stuff to do, even though it seemed like it was empty once you did it for dozens of hours.
Right, there was still at least a couple of multiple goals, the upgrades to your ships weren't entirely cosmetic. They gave you more, they gave you more room to hold stuff and things like that. It's one of those things that they could probably take care of with, you know, adding content, which they said they're going
to
do, but
like how the first No Man's Sky update was big enough to get,
sure.
But then it was too late though. But then there was so much buzz around No Man's Sky.
So I feel like Rare probably should have learned a very important lesson from watching someone else release a game
that wasn't finished.
That while they're obviously two different games, they're both getting compared, I think, rightly in the same way for feeling. You've got this large open world, but you've got a very dead feeling to it.
When I saw this at first, I swear to God, I thought it was a mobile game. It was like those commercials you see, like, you know what I mean? Like, World of Planes.
Yeah.
Sea of Thieves.
They did take a weird... I'm not, like, totally against, like, a cartoony art style, but it
that
did...
That, too. It's it, very it, simplistic art style.
It seemed like
mobile-ish.
It was almost emulating that mobile art style.
But it almost seems like, just from seeing some gameplay footage, I've seen a lot, I've seen some... It looks like a fucking mobile game. I'm sorry. The way it looks and plays,
sure,
it looks like it can be a mobile game. Then again, at this point, they have, you know, PUBG on mobile. I think they just announced that it's ad-free or free. One of the two. And then there's also Fortnite mobile game, which is tying up fucking Wi-Fi at high schools and schools, supposedly. I almost added that article, how that's getting nuts. Jesus. People playing that. So it's starting to bridge closer together in some aspects, depending on the game. But this looks like a cheap fucking game. That's all I'm going to say. You can say I haven't played it. I have it. It looks cheap.
I would love to play it in ideal conditions where you have four people that know each other on one ship and four people that actually know each other on another ship. But a lot of people say that the issue is that's never what you get, and you end up with four random people trying to pilot, navigate a pirate ship, and it's just nonsense.
Someone said that, I can't confirm this, but someone said that the Kraken, you can count on the Kraken, it's so cheap that the Kraken, the tentacles come out the water.
But there's nothing under.
There's nothing under the water.
Yeah. Yeah. The big final boss in the game is just tentacles.
Is that the final boss, technically? Or the biggest thing you can encounter?
Oh, it's the biggest enemy or something
and there's,
like that.
So you shoot at fucking tentacles.
Yeah.
That just sounds half-assed, may I say.
Yeah, I won't disagree there.
You won't disagree there? All right. Well, go play Sea of Thieves. It's on your iPhone and on your... No, it's not. It's on Xbox One.
It sounds like the game is... The thief.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Ian, we're in a dark time when it comes to our toy stores.
Yeah.
Especially the Toys R Us, the last major chain that's all around from the big four that existed.
Right.
From the 70s and 80s. The founder of Toys R Us passed away right before the liquidation sales started. George Lazarus.
I was going to say Charles, but yeah, George.
Is it Charles Lazarus?
I think, I'm not sure.
So isn't that just, you hope that that wasn't what did him in. Charles Lazarus passes away days after Toys R Us said we're done. We're
keeps gonna... making me think of the Orange Lazarus from Pete and Pete.
Okay.
Anyways.
But so they've started the clearance sales. They started at 10% off, I believe. I think it varies per store, though, for some reason, depending on what's on sale. But it sounds like this. Just the thought, though, has there was some pictures on Twitter, social media, about people just rushing to the stores to buy shit.
Yeah.
It was like, wow, this isn't going to be around forever, so let's appreciate what we have.
Bonnie went and checked it out, and, I mean, before, I mean, the shelves were just barren.
That was also because they probably haven't been stocking anything new the past few months since they announced, especially our local store was announced as ones going under before they all were going under. So in the midst of all this, there's been a couple of weird developments. KB Toys announced that they are trying to come back. Now, let's be clear here. This is one of these fucking Coleco cases. They're owned by Strategic Marks LLC, as in probably Strategic Trademarks. So it's a company that buys up zombie trademarks to repackage or try to repurpose them.
Right.
That's what it looks like to me when I'm looking at this. This is from the fucking press release on LinkedIn. We're bringing back KB Toy Stores very soon. We've received so many calls, emails, and private messages of support as we try to hashtag save the toy industry. Due to overwhelming response, we can't commit to replying back immediately. We will get to all messages as fast as we can. Many of you have asked what our plans will be. And all we can say is we spent the last 6 months working on a sustainable model to bring back KB Toys the right way so it can compete with not only the big box stores, but online as well. Our umbrella, Strategic Marks LLC, I love that name, has been very successful bringing back many of the other popular products and companies over the last 10 years because we follow a very strict formula. They bring back the experiences we loved as a child, just as you remembered them.
That sounds creepy. A strict formula to bring back experiences you remember as a child.
We spent the last few days with our team and leaders in the toy industry to figure out how we can accelerate the project so our stores can open for the Christmas season. Good luck with that.
Yeah. That's
good luck getting a chain of fucking toy stores open before Christmas.
That's insane.
From nothing. I don't understand this. We hope to replace... Find places for those 33,000 jobs which will be lost as Toys R Us closes. Please be patient with us over the next few months. Okay.
Yeah, I'm sure those people are just going to sit around and wait for you to rehire them at minimum wage.
So this is what I see. I see an online store for sure, branded KB Toys. Why not?
That's easy.
You can get that going.
Yeah.
You know, and you can link to, you can get, you know, you can even just be a drop ship site that you don't have to, you know, house the stuff yourself to say, oh, you know, like an Amazon. For toys. I see that. Here's the point, or here's the issue, Ian. KB has been, the last stores closed around, what, 2007? 2006?
Was it even that?
2008?
Okay. I thought it was earlier.
Mid-2000s. Sure. It was mid-2000s whenever KB closed. KB, even before then, was not the biggest toy store since the early 80s. Then they started closing left and right, and malls got less popular. KB stopped being like a destination probably to me in the 90s somewhere.
That's the last time I remember shopping at KB. It was when I was actively going to the mall a lot.
They went out of business 2009, so it actually wasn't that recent.
Oh, okay.
So I think it was more of a slow death. So they had 431 locations at the peak.
Wow.
That was prior to closing. I think I had like 605.
I feel like they were guaranteed to be in every mall at one point.
From my research on state events, they had more at one point than Toys R Us. They were the biggest. They're bigger than Children's Palace / Child's Place, whatever, and more than the Kitty City.
Child's World,
slash,
Kitty City.
So that's Child's World. Yeah. Children's Palace and Child's World, I always confuse the two. There was no Children's Palace in the Northeast. We didn't have that.
Mm-mm.
Seems nice with that nice panda. There's a nice, good old panda. You might want to... Yeah, Strategic Marks just got... They just registered for it in 2016. Toys R Us used to own They used to have it. I guess they bought out whatever stock and trademarks. That's right. I remember seeing that. They did do that at the time. Close them out for good. So founder Elia Kassoff stated that due to Toys R Us going out of business, they plan to have pop-up stores. Oh, pop-up stores running before 2008. Oh, they're going to appear at your local swap meet and just have a KB toy store stand? A pop-up store, Ian. That's like the little ones in the mall, like the little stands that pop up. This is garbage.
Well, I mean, a pop-up store can also mean like an event store. Like, so a pop-up can also mean...
It can mean like you have a truck and you stop and like you're selling tacos.
And you, well, a pop-up can like, it can be larger than that, but either way, it's cheap. It's shoddy.
It will not be the KB you remember.
Well,
it will not be that.
No. No.
Well, they have the big clearance bins and the wire bins where I got all my Sierra games in early 90s. I love that.
What I would actually really be most interested in knowing is, will there be a circular display with yapping robot puppies that do flips right out front?
That was the best part about the mall, right?
Yeah.
You can hear Oh, my God. I almost forgot about that. So, yeah, a pop-up store definition is it's short-term sale. So, yes. You're like, fly by night almost.
They sometimes last. I mean, they can last anywhere from a week, and they take place outside, or they could be indoors.
But you can set it up easily. Yeah. It can be like a two-person operation.
Sure.
But that's what you're going to get with your little KB toys trademark and little fucking toy soldier looking guy with the red jacket.
At least right now. Certainly.
So I'm not excited about that, Ian.
No.
As you can see, 99% of the time, I'm not too excited about these zombie trademarks being taken over and try to be revived.
No, it's always a bad time.
You're going to have a bad time. Yeah. So the other weird news with this is the weird crowdfunding that they're trying to do to bring back Toys R Us on GoFundMe.
Mm-hmm. Explain.
So there's a group that is putting in a bid. It's GoFundMe.com/HelpSaveToysRUs. It's a group of investors. It's from the CEO of MGA Entertainment, one of the world's leading privately held toy entertainment companies, and creator of family favorite brands including Little Tykes. I've heard of Little Tykes actually. So they're asking for it's a meager amount. It's $1 billion. A billion.
Oh.
That's to put in the bid during the bankruptcy hearings in order to win the assets and trademarks and everything else, though.
Okay.
That's just to win it. They think that's what it would cost to get everything.
Ah.
So this is what's so confusing about it. When you click on it, they've raised $200,049,000. But the $200 million, I think, is from the private round, like them putting in to build it up.
Okay.
So I think when you really look at this, you're looking at, well, how many people are actually putting money? And you see $5, $20, and there's only 1,600 donations.
Right.
So there's no way in hell 1,600 donations gets to $200 million.
No.
Unless some of those are giving $100,000 or more, you know, to get up to that point.
Sure.
Or $1 million or more. And I think that's why it's not disingenuous, but when you look at it, you got to be like, oh, okay, $200 million. That's like every man and woman in America giving a dollar. I'm in.
Right.
But no, that's not really what's going on here. They've had this set up before they got to this point. But now they're trying to get more people involved. So they have tiers like... The tiers are just funny because it's like, okay, yeah, if you want to donate $50, whatever. Again, this is just to help them win it. But to their credit, they said if they don't win it, all the money goes back. So
that's cool.
So it's not like they're taking $1 billion and running
right
with it, which would be, you know, that would be, you know, jail time forever.
Right.
This isn't like a game on Kickstarter where you raise $50,000 and don't have to make it. You take $1 billion.
Right.
People are coming after you at that point. This is, be advised, this is not a donation to a charitable cause. There's no tax deduction available. It is a donation to a potential commercial venture. The funds raised would be added to other capital being gathered by the potential purchasers of some or all of Toys R Us. A donation to this campaign does not qualify you to claim equity in any potential acquisition. It simply means you want future generations to be Toys R Us kids. All right. Here's the issue with that, Ian. They have tiers at $5, $10, $25, and $50,000.
Yeah.
I'm just going to skip the $25. What do you get at $50,000? You get the hashtag Save Toys R Us sticker, pin, magnet. I'll always be a Toys R Us kids shirt and a block party for your friends. Oh, a block party at $50,000.
Okay.
I wonder how much hot dog rolls and potato salad costs in order to get that $50,000. If I am donating $5, $10, $25,000, I want some fucking equity.
Yeah.
If this goes through. I don't care if it's point... I want stock. I don't care if it's 0.0001%. I want that equity.
Right.
I think that's really kind of slimy to do that. Just because when you look at the 200 million mark, the people that are putting in that, they're not... They're getting equity.
Right. Exactly.
If I'm putting in millions. So if you're putting in a million, why do you get equity? And if I'm putting in 50,000, I don't get equity. What the hell is the difference? Just the size of your investment. That's how stock works. That's how investment works. So... Yeah, I don't know if this is going to happen. I think there will be some bidding done for this. Toys R Us is too big not to be gone completely. I just don't know how it's going to come back.
Right.
I think that's what remains to be seen. And just to piggyback off that, this was from somebody, I don't know the name. As I didn't have a Toys R Us available to me, this is from Twitter. As I didn't have a Toys R Us available to me until I was in high school, what was it like to have access to one as a kid? Did it influence any gaming choices in your life? As it did Game Over Greggy.
Me?
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing I get. This whole Toys R Us thing is... I can't get nearly as choked up as everyone else has about it. Because I didn't do a ton of shopping at Toys R Us. I do have fond memories of Toys R Us when I was a kid. You know, it was where I bought the first video game I bought with my own money, which was Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. You know, that's where I went to go do it.
I was that crazy Eddie.
I very much remember, you know, grabbing the slip and doing that. And, you know, I have those memories. I remember browsing. I remember how awesome, you know, the one that I went to when I was a kid, you know, all the board games were on one big side of the wall. And then the setup was down the center was the clear case with all the video game systems on display. And then on the other side of that was all the little hanging, you know, video game things. So you could flip them up and look at them. So
mine was
I mean,
a different aisle, by the way.
Huh?
Mine was a different aisle entirely for software versus hardware.
So yeah, it was like software, hardware, and then board games. So it was awesome. And I remember that clearly and I liked it, but I don't have a lot of memories of going to Toys R Us, like, as a teenager and young adult, because I went to the mall very often. I actually have a lot more stored up here about KB Toys, actually.
So that was more your toy store.
I mean, yeah, when I was growing up, I would stop into KB Toys regularly, whereas Toys R Us, I remember more from being a kid. And yeah, I liked it, but it wasn't a huge part of my life.
Okay, it was a huge part of mine. I mean, that's where, and that's not where I bought all my toys, because we would go to Kmart when it was like the G.I. Joes were on sale for like buy one, get one free, like twice a year. That's when I can get G.I. Joes or Bradley's or Caldor.
Sure.
The smaller big box stores, you can call them, or smaller, whatever, department stores. I guess smaller big box stores before they all went out of business by like the mid-90s.
Yeah,
they were mostly all gone.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
I love Caldor, by the way. Just looked like straight out of 71, how it was built and looked. You know, I don't know if you had a Caldor. We had Caldor, Bradley's, and Kmart all within like 5 minutes of each other. We didn't have any Targets or Walmart, so they came from the Midwest, so they took a while for them to come out.
We had like a Hills and AM&A's.
AM&A's?
AM&A's, yeah.
So how did it influence gaming choices? Well, obviously, that's how you found out about some stuff.
Oh, right.
You know?
But I don't think it influenced a ton. I mean, I think those little Nintendo posters that came with games probably influenced my choices more.
Or Nintendo Power.
Yeah.
Exactly. Or a Game Pro if you had it, or whatever magazine from the Electronic Gaming Monthly.
I mean, I guess my parents were smart enough to not take me in there just to browse. So
oh, you
not,
couldn't.
Yeah, so it's not like I was ever in there for a long period of time, you know, doing a whole lot of comparing.
No.
My mom would always, you know, begrudgingly be, or my dad would be like, yeah, fine, go check out the video games if we were in there to pick up a birthday present or something like that. But, yeah, I was never in there really without a purpose, so I can't say that it affected much in the way of how I shopped for games.
Yeah, I think I always knew what I wanted before I went in, for, exactly. at least for a video game.
Yes.
And then I was always disappointed when there was no tickets.
Yep.
And this is why I'm in love with Kitty City, because when I went to Kitty City, you could see the games.
Yes.
And say, give me that game, woman behind the counter. Like, you can just say, you like, give me Top Secret Episode.
Yeah.
Give me Contra.
You
give
couldn't
me,
be
give me Zelda.
By something that wasn't in yes. stock. It either yes. wasn't there, it
I
was
can't,
out of sight,
I
out
can't
of
explain
mind.
The difference of how much better it is to be given the game and trusted with it to go to the cash register. That feeling versus, here, take a fucking ticket, you asshole.
I mean, the paper ticket is something we all remember, but it wasn't
so
ideal.
Because either
you'd see the slab first, the plastic thing, and you'd be like, yes, and then there'd be no tickets.
There'd be no ticket.
And they'd legitimately be sold out. Or you'd get that...
Or your asshole friend named Kevin would take the tickets.
Or your asshole friend named Kevin would take all the
Which
tickets.
Which he did, by the way. He would yeah. take a ticket for a game and hold on to it.
Yeah, exactly. Or some shithead kid would grab all the tickets and throw them into the Barbie aisle.
Well, that I've never seen. You had some assholes kids in Buffalo doing that.
And, you know, for a minute, you might hold out a faint hope against hope that you could go up there and be like, do you actually have a copy back there?
I was too shy to do that.
And then you would get stabbed.
Just for that. They also had all the hot toys, like Cabbage Patch Kids were in there. I think the bikes were in there, or some like the radio control car, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Train sets and things.
Yeah.
Something, whatever they have behind the glass. And then usually they'd have like the more expensive stuff.
The liquor
Toys R Us?
The blunt wraps, you know, are behind the
cage. Jeffrey Giraffe rum. Yeah. Is that what they had? Spotted rum. So no, it didn't really influence the choices, but it definitely, obviously, we didn't talk about the personal feelings as much last time we spoke about it, but no, it is kind of sad. But these stores in general are going out of business. It's just what it is. I mean, malls are dying. These big box stores, unless you're Target or Walmart and you have the huge size and volume to buy in such a gigantic level to get the savings, it's tough. And that's why people are saying they're going to Toys R Us and getting 10% off. The prices are still not as good as like Amazon
right.
or Walmart. So blame the consumer partially too. And also blame the private equity firms that dumping all their debt when they bought Toys R Us back in whatever it was, 2005 or six. Not being able to climb out. But that's what happens when you go, you know, you go public or you sell. Charles Lazarus, I'm sorry. You probably didn't make the decision yourself. I know the history, but, you know, you probably wouldn't want to sell your, I can't imagine that, your lifelong business and it just fucking dies and then you do.
Yeah.
It's kind of sad.
Death of a broken heart.
Hopefully they kept all the news from him. Like, they took away his phone and TV. No, nothing's, granddad, nothing's going on.
Yeah.
Toys R Us is going to live forever. Oh God, it's depressing. Moving on, Ian.
Yes.
Ian, this is in your wheelhouse.
This is right.
This
in my
is like I can just shut the fuck up for like 20 minutes, which I think I will.
So this is excellent. So people started doing this a while ago. Handheld games are like the handheld LCD games are finally starting to get emulated and put
emulated.
Online in a way that they can be played. The LCD handheld games. This is being done over at the Internet Archive, and they're starting to host about 60 of these games right now, and I'm sure we'll start to see more. They're hosting a variety of the LCD and vacuum fluorescent display games from companies such as Tiger, Konami, Coleco, and other companies. And it's really quite interesting, and because this is a very tricky style of emulation. So these are like the little handheld games that we all remember from when we were kids. And if you
baseball,
don't
football.
If you don't recall them, they're little handheld games with a tiny LCD screen,
liquid crystal display.
Which sounds cooler than it is. I've always thought liquid crystal display. I'm like, wow, that's fancy. And then you look at it and it's like, no, it's not. They usually have like a control pad on one side and a couple of buttons. It looks like a calculator. You shove a couple batteries in there. And the ones a lot of us will remember were really shitty. They were based on movie licenses and the gameplay was rough.
There were some video game ones. I had Ninja Gaiden, I had Double Dragon, they had Mega Man. I think there's probably dozens of ones
based
on video
Sonic,
games.
Yeah. But I'm just saying, I mean, they were all eventually licensed. Or they were largely licensed on video games or movies or
they didn't
or
start that
like
way,
that.
Though.
Yeah,
they were generic.
We're getting there, yeah.
Karate.
So they started out very generic, especially in the 70s and 80s. They were just... you know, space. race, you know, in various things like
but
that.
I think there was like an Entex. No, that wasn't LCD. The Entex Space Invaders. That was a
vacuum fluorescent display.
Or LED, actually. It might have been. Actually, I don't know.
It might have been LED, too.
Might have been.
Anyways, so these are starting to become preserved because as time goes on, they're getting more and more beat, and they're getting harder. You know, they're getting... Over time, they're going to get destroyed. Unlike with video games or hardware or even arcade boards where the data needed to emulate these can be extracted without destroying them, that's not so much the case, unfortunately, with these handhelds. The handhelds oftentimes need to be destroyed because of how they were created. So the LCD screen needs to be taken apart and separated and scanned for all the preformed graphics, yeah. You know, because the graphics are preformed and then lit up at certain times. And on a lot of these older ones, they're done with solid state circuits. Mm-hmm. So they scan the circuit and they figure out, you know, how everything would play out properly. And then they emulate it in a window and then you can play it that way. And it's great to see that people can go and try all these out and you can see, you know, which ones worked, which ones don't work out so well in terms of gameplay. You can see all sorts of neat experimentation. You can see, you know, where some of them tried to get very complex. I think there's quite a few of the Konami ones actually tried to do a bit more. And it's cool, especially when
Tamagotchi's on here, by the way.
Yeah, Tamagotchi's on there. Especially when you're looking at, like, the Coleco, like, mini arcade cabinets. I think those are some of the best examples of ingenuity when it comes to, you know, translating a full-sized arcade game from that era into what is essentially, you know, a very complicated calculator.
Sure. Was there ever a site before that featured emulation? Something? I thought there was.
Yes, there was.
There's Handheld Museum, right? But I don't know if they were on
there. Handheld Museum didn't have emulation.
It just has a nice collection of like a ton of them, though.
Yeah. There's tons of information. Some of my favorite websites to browse around. There was a place that had some emulated. I don't know how well they were emulated or if they were just recreated.
It was in browser, though.
It was in browser, and they had some Game & Watch ones as well.
I'm trying to find it right now. I can't remember what the name of it, though. But it did exist before, though. This wasn't the first time. No. This has been done by the MAME team, though.
Yeah, MAME team as well as some other people.
I didn't know they were into this, but this is fantastic.
So it's great. The people who are doing it, though, bring up an interesting point that while this so far has emulated the screens in the game, that one of the big things about these is not just the game themselves, but how important the overall experience was tied to what the game came in.
Sure, the shell.
The shell. So
this is almost closer than the like pinball emulation.
Yeah.
So you only need to see like a form of it.
Because, you know, I mean, there are some where there's a, in this one article, there's a really good example of, it's a Bandai one, it's called like Match Pair.
Yeah, because the controller scheme's important to some of these and how you play it.
Well, and also just the visual appeal. So that's right, it's one called Bandai Pair Match, which when you look at the screen, which is emulated.
Pair Match? I don't think I've heard of that one.
When you look at the screen, which is emulated, it's just a simple screen with some blocks on it. And it looks like a solitaire type game. I actually have no idea how this one plays.
It's a pyramid looking thing?
But when you actually look at the physical game, it's a smoky, clear pyramid with controls on the side, which obviously enhances so much about how you play that.
I want this.
Yeah, me too. I was like, damn, I want one.
I don't think that came out here, did it?
No, I think it did. And, you know, if you look at something like the Coleco ones, you know, they're a lot of fun. They're actually a lot of fun to play.
Absolutely.
The little Coleco mini arcades. But a lot of that is also tied to the fact that it's a lot of fun to play around with a little mini arcade cabinet, too.
Yeah, and the little mini joystick actually worked fairly well.
Right. So, you know, you can have fun playing those in emulated form, but so much comes from the experience of using...
There's the skeet shooting tiger one.
Yeah, the skeet shooting tiger one is great, and it's got a little dial.
It's got a dial.
Yeah.
And that's ingenious for something like that. From like 1987 or 88, one of the first ones they made.
And that's one of the best ones they made, in my opinion. So
the two player ones, like the LED ones where you're facing someone, yep, which we should,
the face to face ones, exactly.
You can't get that same feeling. So it's great that they're preserving this though, either way.
Yes.
Obviously.
So what they're basically talking about now is
there was a Bayou Billy Kanime one? I had no idea.
Lone Ranger, Garfield.
There was a Bucky O'Hare. I had no
idea. Three Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I feel like for some reason
they didn't sell a lot of those. I never come across those.
I love them.
I have Top Gun. I have Skate or Die. I have Ninja Turtles, I believe. I have Star Trek.
The first Ninja Turtles is so good.
Star Trek 25th? I have some of those.
So
Knock 'em out boxing. I have that one somewhere. So yeah, Bambino, the name you can trust.
So what they kind of get at in the article is, they want to keep doing this, emulating these games, but they want to maybe start going in the direction of making sure they get great pictures of all of...
Oh, we can play two-player knockout boxing.
Yeah, you're interrupting.
Sorry, this is awesome.
They want to make sure they document all the casing and stuff like that. And I think what might be interesting at some point is to see if, you know, eventually some of these things could be recreated via 3D printing. But so, yeah, I think this is an excellent thing. It's definitely fun to go poking around and play some of these, and I hope to see this project continue.
Sorry, I'm playing knockout boxing. No, this is fantastic. There's probably number of handhelds made between Japan and the U.S. has got to be 1,000.
Oh, there's so many.
There's so,
just literally
look
just
at my
go,
garage, and I don't know which ones I have anymore.
If you have insomnia, the best / worst thing you can do is go poke around handheldmuseum.com.
Oh yes, because you'll be like, oh, that company even made them,
you'll start wanting all of them,
and you'll remember something like Epoch's a weird company that they made a bunch in the early 80s, and mm-hmm. I don't know what the hell happened to them. They got bought out or just went under.
Yeah,
you know.
I have no idea.
Yeah, it's just fantastic work. Some of the ones real quick on the page that you could go. There's right now how many? There's 74 they have already.
There's MC Hammer.
It's a weird. It's a nice variety because they have like Master Merlin ones that were more like
that was ubiquitous around that time too. I remember so many people having those.
That's what I mean. So they're not just doing all quote unquote like traditional LCD games. They're doing some off the beaten path.
Yeah, they're really like, covering everything.
Like Speak and Spell, they have.
Yep.
They have Ultraman Monster Battle, one that we never saw or I ever heard. They have the LED, like two-player ones, like the baseball one. They have Double Dribble, the Konami one. They have older LED Football Tandy one, which if you played one, you probably played them all. But, you mm-hmm. know, but the ones from the late 70s, video game years, we covered that. They have the movie ones, like Batman Forever, Double Dose of Doom. They have a Hayenkyo one. Which I've seen. Those. They have an R-Zone. They have the Qbert tabletop, which I have.
Is a really good one.
That was a
the
part
Frogger
of it. That was
one
not
is
Coleco.
Really great yeah. as well. I have the Frogger
I always forget
one.
About picking up the Zaxxon one that wasn't the Coleco one, which is awesome. Astro Command, which
they
I have.
They have the Tron one, which is really good. That's
I got
a Tommy
that one.
One.
Yep. So, yeah. Overall, there's probably about... They have Zaxxon, actually, but it's a Bandai's green. It's not the traditional one. So, yeah, the tabletops, there was about 20 made overall, including about the Coleco, three Game & Watch ones, and a bunch of other ones. About 20 at most, I think, around there. You think there's more than that?
I don't know.
Depending how you... There's,
I mean, it depends on
how you count
far
it.
You hunt.
Yeah, like I don't count...
I'm thinking Dracula. I don't know. Anyways.
I'm thinking about arcade ones.
Oh, like the actual... Just the arcade ones? Yeah. Sure. Yeah, maybe about 20.
Like, of course, like Galaxian, you have Ms. Pac-Man, you have Pac-Man, you have...
Donkey Kong.
Donkey Kong Jr. was a Game & Watch one. Snoopy was, and Popeye, you know. Handheld MC Hammer. And yes, Tamagotchi, the king of time wasters in the late 90s. And then is there one Game & Watch type one? Thief and Garden?
Yeah, it's not Game & Watch.
But
though.
It's a type, yeah. There's actually no Game & Watches on here.
Probably for obvious reasons.
You think Nintendo would come after them for a Game & Watch? Well, they do sell them in the collections, I guess.
Yeah.
But not, they wouldn't. Come on, Nintendo. All right, moving on. Good stuff. These days, Ian, with the internet and with convenience of modern living and technology, you can get everything on demand, just like our podcast. You also can get postage on demand to mail letters and packages with stamps.com. That's right, stamps.com. You can access all the amazing services of the post office right from your desk 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, when it's convenient to you. I've used it plenty of times to mail out CU Podcast shirts, buttons, Pat the Aeneas Punk DVDs. You know, I'm making us money.
You can do it in your pajamas.
I can. I have mine right now. Thanks to stamps.com. Printmedia.com. Buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter, any package using your own computer and printer. And the mail carrier can pick it up. Just click print mail and you're done. It couldn't be easier. So how do you get this special offer, which includes $55 in free postage, a digital scale, and a four-week trial? How do you do that? Go to stamps.com, click on the radio microphone right now at the top, and type in CU Podcast for your free $55 postage package, digital scale, and your four-week trial. Again, stamps.com, click on the microphone, enter the code CU Podcast, and you also can mail packages
from your home.
And pajamas.
In pajamas.
So, we have an update. We had GDC just passed, Game Developers Conference, and what was that, San Francisco?
Yes. So, this is opening up our bread box and pulling out our bread and getting some butter from the fridge.
If there's something you can count on the CU Podcast for, it's a coverage of weird-ass new consoles with retro names, all-in-one ROM consoles of dubious legality, and this stuff, you know, all-in-one.
Pipe dream systems. So, anyways, the Atari box is no longer the Atari box. It is now the Atari VCS, which has already existed.
Which was the original name of the 2600.
Right.
In 77, 78.
I mean, you know.
And a couple years after, I think.
People love it when companies just reuse the same name as an old product. You know, the Atari VCS is inspired by the iconic silhouette of the original Atari 2600, which was originally called the Atari VCS.
Yeah, thanks.
But whatever. Fucking Christ. I can't. Already, like, I'm so angry looking at the picture, and I'll tell you why I'm angry about it.
Why?
Because the prototype joystick controller was obviously not thought about, because it, once again, only has a button.
One button.
On the left-hand side.
They couldn't even put two on there.
No.
Joysticks back then, they made third-party ones that had two buttons.
Yeah, I know. I can't.
Help Ian out.
Help me out.
Help me out, because when you play a game in the arcade, you usually use your left hand on the joystick anyway.
It's dumb. Anyways, so this is just, I mean, let's just get into the shitty fucking corporate
stuff. So they had prototypes to show off of the console, a snazzy-looking joystick, which is a modernized version, doesn't have two buttons though. And it's the generic go-to joypad of the 21st century.
Yeah.
I guess you can say that with what you have two joysticks. You have a weird ass looking circular D-pad that almost looks Intellivision-esque. Four face buttons, and I'm sure there's a few triggers. The only, I guess, clever thing is that on the left of the two joysticks, they have it red to emulate the red button of a 2600. That's clever.
It is. It's kind of cute.
The console still, Ian wants to put his penis on, potentially.
Maybe
with those angles, you don't want to get it caught up.
No, it's a little more angular than I thought.
It's more angular now.
Yeah. So
that's not the issue, though.
The Atari says the VCS hardware was inspired by the iconic silhouette. Right. It's going to feature lots. That's the reason. Lots of classic Atari games, along with current titles from a range of studios. Lots of classic games. No names.
It's custom AMD processor. That's a big shock.
Mm-hmm. That was told originally.
They said the launch was delayed. They felt the key element was missing.
I think the key element is...
Don't put it on a T for Ian and I. Don't put it on a fucking T.
Yeah, key element's a system, games...
Reason to exist?
A market? Yeah, an audience? Anyone wanting this fucking thing? You're not missing a key element. You're missing a fucking keychain. You're missing the door. You're missing the door entirely. You're trying to unlock a brick fucking wall.
At least use a batting machine. A pitching machine when you're doing these stories. Don't put it on a T for us.
I mean, hell.
Jesus Christ.
That's why you're missing a key element.
With the Atari VCS in, we know how important it is to get everything completely right, and that's why we briefly paused. They briefly paused it, what, the day of or just, day before?
Yeah, just real quick, I gotta go take a piss. Hold on, just one brief pause.
They briefly paused it. It was a difficult decision with the countdown underway, but we weren't willing to go for it with
even one thing out of alignment. Because it was only one thing. It was just a key element. Just one thing. A key element. Atari, interest.
Atari plans to announce when pre-orders will begin for the VCS sometime in April. They will announce when pre-orders will begin. They will, okay. The
pre-orders are going to announce. We're announcing our pre-order announcement for April.
The teaser for the pre-orders is April. It's going to be, it was previously estimated 250, 300. Now, the awesome article from the Register. Oh, those blokes in the UK know how to write,
yeah.
Don't they?
Yeah. Oh, my God. It was a difficult decision with the countdown underway, but we weren't willing to go forward.
So this article from the Register to follow up is we sent a vulture to find the relaunched Atari box, and all he got was this lousy baseball cap. Things get surreal in suite 7088. Now, when you go to these conventions, there's usually they have these little booths set up or little rooms.
Yeah.
This sounds like, though, it was a suite at the hotel Atari had decked out, it sounded like. Suite 7088 at the Marriott Marquis Hotel in San Fran, directly opposite of the GDC. So they actually weren't set up at the GDC then? You had to go to the hotel room to hang out?
Oh, okay.
This sounds interesting.
Yeah, that's good.
So they checked it out. They said, one problem, though, doesn't work. By not work, we don't mean it crashed or is having teething troubles. We mean it literally does not work.
Oh.
When Atari's chief operating officer, Michael Arts, this is by Kieran McCarthy, by the way, this article. When Atari's chief operating officer, Michael Arts, suggested we take a look at the ports at the back, we're surprised to find it actually weighs something. Atari knows how to mock up products. They're a little cheeky. They're a little cheeky with this article. It said, less impressive is the game controller, which looks like an industry standard, which we talked about. The sort of thing hooked up to an Xbox or PlayStation. The buttons don't move. The joysticks are rigid. It has nothing inside. The traditional controller works, Arts told us, pointing to the square stick box with a red button that many, many years ago was the games controller. It's hard not to get a twinge of nostalgia. So that's basically a USB controller, because those exist. You can buy Atari 2600 USB controllers.
Sure.
So they basically got one and said, this is our prototype for it. I mean, that's probably what they did, I'm assuming, if it worked.
Yeah.
You wouldn't start wouldn't start with that first. You would start with the system first.
From the Book of Kennedy right there. just go grab a third-party controller and call it your prototype.
What happens if we plug this into our laptop? We ask Mike. I don't know, he says. Will it work? I don't know. If we plug it into different games machines, will it work? No. So it's custom hardware and software? I don't know about that. So this is the person representing Atari in the hotel room.
God, this seems so Mike, fucking familiar.
And his name is Mike, by the way.
Yeah.
I've kind of like skipped over that. Mike doesn't know lots of things about the Atari VCS, standing for Atari Video Computer System, which is odd because he's the exec in charge of it. But for those things he doesn't know, he makes up for all the things he does know, none of which he can tell us about. Launch date, can't say. Interface, can't tell you. Hardware manufacturer, can't tell you. Games developer partners, we're talking to people. Target market, we can't say.
We can't say what the target market is because we don't have one. We don't know.
Wow, I can't believe I skipped over the guy's name was Mike.
Mike
tries to tell us that big product launches are suspended all the time. We tell them they really aren't.
They aren't.
And on the rare occasion that they are, the company goes out of its way to explain why and give a new launch timeline. Wow.
Woo!
Mike explains that the situation is the hours before the final countdown to a NASA rocket launch. Sometimes, even in the last few seconds, they have to call it off because of one small issue. Yes, this is very comical.
Yeah, oh my God,
a fucking game console is comical to launching a rocket with people into space.
Holy shit.
No, they said, we point out that a games console is literally nothing like a rocket launch. Ooh, they suck it to Mike, these cheeky bastards at the Register. They don't put up with guff, these UK journalists.
It's good.
Mike is getting fed up. I wish I was in the fucking room.
Yeah, me too.
We focus on finding actual real details, and then here's what we get. It'll cost around $250. It will be, in quotes, like a good laptop. It will do 4K video. It will use an AMD chipset. Although they don't know which yet, it will run on Linux. Of course, these all run on Linux.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Woo!
Man.
This is article's great. I don't want to recap the whole article, but they say, Crossroad companies are live demoing headsets that track your eyeballs and respond accordingly. Physically running around with sci-fi super guns. We were in a hotel suite staring at a games console from our youth that doesn't work. And the answer, the only reason, is the name. Isn't that case in point?
Yep.
We thank Mike, wish him all the best, and grab an Atari-branded baseball cap on the way out the door. Wow. And that's all you need to say. Kieran said it better than we could because he was there. Well...
Yeah.
Anything else to add? There's a lot of comments on the on this Register article. So the first comment, just slap a Raspberry Pi in there and be done with it.
Yeah. Slap a Super Nintendo in there with a copy of Arcade's Greatest Hits and just call it a day.
Wow, throwback again.
Yeah. What I'd like to think is that this might be, fingers fucking crossed, that we might see people stop trying to do this.
Because they see it fail?
After this.
You think so?
Well, this is, I mean, in all the ways that I never imagined it would. Again, this is honestly going down the road that the Retro VGS and the Chameleon did.
Well, this is a company that could might be able to put it out and have maybe the money to do it, but it will get to what the Coleco Chameleon was going to do, like have built-in games of shit you owned from 35 right. years ago, and then try to do modern stuff too that won't, like, there's no reason to do it.
It's going to be a less successful...
Except that was on a cartridge.
It's going to be less successful at Ouya.
Yeah. Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
So it's what's going to happen, but I'm saying, like, in terms of all fluff, no lined up. I mean, there's no reason why these people wouldn't want to talk about it, obviously. I mean, this I don't even need to say that. If you had games lined up, if you had big name developers behind you, you'd be fucking shitting that all over the internet right
now. This is what's going to be. It's going to be awesome looking. It's going to remind you of it. Maybe it'll be well made. You're going to turn it on. You're going to get a cute little Atari logo like you're turning on your fucking Sega Dreamcast. You're going to boot up to an interface where you can access Hulu, Netflix, and anything else you can do on any Roku, any smart TV, or any device that's been out for the last 8 to 10 years. And then you're going to have 50 of the same built-in Atari games you've had on every fucking flashback, on every greatest hits you've had for the past 20 years.
Yeah.
That's what you're going to have for $300 or $250 mm-hmm. with one controller that's probably going to be average at best. And one USB controller that's already on the market. Joystick that Ian can't use because they hate lefties.
They hate lefties. But you can sit and spin. So, yeah. Where I was going, though, is... So, I think this... I still think this is very much in the same area. This person is trying to cash in on nostalgia. They have...
Well, the company is, yeah.
Yeah, the company's trying to cash in on nostalgia. These people have no idea what they're talking about. This is going to fail. And... I think maybe if this fails in a more public way than the Coleco Chameleon and Retro VGS did, in a bigger spotlight, then maybe people will stop trying this fucking horrendous bullshit with, trademarks and stuff like that, and stop trying to bring back these old retro systems. I mean, $250, fucking insulting. Get a Switch, $50 more. Go buy a fucking PS4 for $50 less used. I mean. Eat my shit. I'm done.
So this is interesting topic that I'm actually not as down on as you might seem. I've known Chris Kohler alerted me to this. Looks like there's going to be a second video game grading service on the rise. It's called WADA. WADA Game Certification. They posted on Nintendo Age. And the people that are starting this come from Nintendo Age, some of them, but they're incorporating others. So just from the start, I can say I like this idea because they're telling you who's involved and what these people are and what their pedigree is.
Yeah, let me come out on this right off the bat and say that obviously things remain to be seen. But
sure.
I am so excited for this because here's the thing. When you read the announcement that they make.
On my favorite website, by the way. I haven't
said
it in a while.
Nintendo Age, your favorite website. When you read the announcement, it's a long announcement, but you know it is good. At least there's a lot of info in there. When you get to the bottom, they state obviously that grading and all that is not for everyone. I'm still pretty much in the boat that I'm not really into the whole grading of games thing. But
no, absolutely
it's
not.
Too late. But it's too late. Okay,
it's
that's
a thing. It's there. It's,
for,
it's
already
for,
happened.
It's for a very small portion of video game collectors,
but it's there.
Yes,
and I've already stated many times I do not like VGC. It's already there. It's out. I read the announcement. I know a lot of the people who are involved with it. I've read the back of it. And this is exactly what VGC would have needed for me to even consider being okay with it. And now because I don't want people thinking that I'm flip-flopping here.
No, it's not.
What it is VGC came out and I did not agree with it. which then once that happened, we weren't going to graded games weren't going to disappear. That opened the market then for something that I did agree with in terms of grading. This is it.
The biggest issue I had, and Chris Kohler, when I had the conversation with him in our Twitter war, the great Twitter beef of 2018, going back and forth about VGC, was the transparency of VGC was non-existent.
Right.
You didn't know what their qualifications were. Mm-hmm. All you knew was they'd done it for something else. They had done it for toys. So they know how to build acrylic cases. Congratulations. Cool. Doesn't mean you know how to grade a video game.
Right.
That was always the issue with me. You don't know who these people are. You don't know how they're trained. You don't know how they're tracking things. You don't know what the criteria is. And there was no pedigree for that.
Yeah.
So now we've built up at least some sort of, in the past 10 years or even less than that, there's been people that have collected and traded and sold a bunch of sealed games. There's people that would probably know more about than even the people that were grading at VGC to begin with.
Yeah.
So now you're starting to build real authorities and experts. So some of the people involved, this is what the announcement is. It's a thread on Nintendo Age here. So they said, we were always collectors first. This is, a Super NES man. It's a longtime member. Joined in 2008. That's when I joined. I'm a long time, or 2000, early 2000. I'm a long standing member of Nintendo Age, by the way.
Okay.
I know I'm in good standing. I'm a long standing member. We are a company grown from this community of video game collectors. Our vision is to grow and elevate the video game hobby that we love so dearly from one based in nostalgia into the legitimized appreciation of art and history that it deserves. Through competency, consistency, and transparency, there's the word, we aim to create objective standards. There was never standards with VGC, that will reinvigorate confidence in the marketplace and make the collecting experience a rewarding one. All right, obviously they're going to make money on this. It's a business.
Well, sure.
But there is a need for this.
Yes.
There absolutely is a need for a competitor and a better one.
That's what I was getting at. With the creation of VGC, whether we like it or not, the grading market for video games sprung into existence. It wasn't going to go away. So that opened, in my mind, a need for something like this. And this is being done the way that I would want it to be done. I mean, this is what I would want to see.
The WADA family includes our four founders and extends to our trusted advisors who we have invited to be community advocates, each bringing their own unique and expert perspectives to help accomplish our overall vision and representing the community interests. Four of our expert members are here on NA. Dane, salt of the earth, honest guy, is a sealed collector, and he has mentioned stuff about VGC that he dislikes, so that's a natural fit, and I would trust him.
I feel like that's probably one of the best choices you could have made.
Dane, I love Dane. I love Dane. Dan or Bronte, who's a big sealed time collector, at one point he had, I think, almost the entire set sealed, or just about. I've gotten to heated back and forth with him in the past about the philosophy of collecting sealed games and my disagreement, but I would trust him since he's a guy that's been collecting forever.
Right. And that's who you want on that panel.
Jonas or Joan Bone, I've seen him around. He's a longtime member. Don't know too much specifically about him. I might have said hi to him once at convention. And Josh Kicksmaster, who I've met at tons of these conventions. We've had issues in the past, but we're on good terms now. And I would trust him, though. He's a long-time collector. I would trust him. Other advisory board members hail from comic and coin collecting markets with deep roots in certification.
See, I think that's very important, too.
Paul Litch and Matt Nelson, CGC's two primary graders. So we have two coin guys. Or is that comic?
That's comic.
It's comic. Oh. And Jim Halperin, which is a name I've heard of before, co-founder and owner of Heritive Auctions.
Yes.
That's important. Heritive Auctions is pretty legit.
Yeah, and I mean, having the guys from CGC...
And Josh Nathanson, founder, owner of Comic Link, which I've heard of as well as auction.
Having guys from CGC in there and Coin, I mean, the importance of that can't be overstated, because that's where you're going to get the insight into what should be graded, what should be
What are the standards?
What are the standards?
How do we establish a set of guidelines for our graders?
Exactly.
And communicating that to the community.
Especially because, you know, when you're looking at a video game, there's so many more aspects if you're going to grade this. So many more angles. It's a much more three-dimensional object than a comic book, which lays flatter. You know what I'm saying? There's so much more to take into account, I would think, that, you know, establishing that set of standards is probably going to be more difficult, and all that input is going to be very useful.
So what games will they certify? Certifies any games for the following systems and links coming April 2nd. There are rare exceptions when the game, when the box for a game is too large to encapsulate in our case. They are currently grading standard size games for the following systems: NES, all states, Super Nintendo, all states, N64, complete in box and sealed. Interesting. GameCube, complete in box and sealed. Wii, complete in box and sealed. Wii U, complete in box and sealed. So when they say all states, they mean just if I give you a cartridge, you're going to grade it?
Yeah.
That could be weird. And I'll get into that later about grading. I can see a point for certifying, but now I have a fear that we're going to get into a state where you're going to go to gaming conventions and you're going to see stacks of hard-to-find NES games or ones that are over $200 are going to be slabbed. That's a bad state of affairs if we get to there. That is bad. That I do not agree with if they go that route.
No.
I think there's still easy ways to tell a real from a fake cartridge without having to have a person certify it. Anyone with a tool bit and an eye for recognizing a real versus fake label can do that. I don't agree with that.
Certification over slabbing, though, can still be done.
But then if you certify, it has to be slabbed.
Oh, true. Yeah.
So you can't swap it out. Okay, I got a problem with that. I'm going to come on record with that. So everything else, though, is either complete in box and sealed. Okay. Sega Genesis, complete in box and sealed. No love for the Master System. Sega CD, complete box and sealed. All the rest are basically complete box and sealed. 32X, Saturn, makes sense. Xbox, regular Xbox, Xbox 360, if you want to do that for some reason. PlayStation 1 long box and PlayStation, not regular PlayStation, just PlayStation 1 long box. Interesting. And PlayStation 2. And they'll begin the grade soon. Everything else. Game Boy, Game Boy Color, Virtual Boy, loose N64 games. Hmm. Game Boy Advance, DS, 3DS, Switch, Game & Watch.
Oh, that's cool.
How would you, I guess you rated the how good the cover
overall
is.
Condition and probably the LCD.
Master System, Game Gear, Dreamcast, 2600, 52, 70, all the Atari consoles besides the new VCS. Xbox One, every Sony thing coming soon, including the Vita, TurboGrafx and CD. Nokia N-Gage, if you want to do that. TigerGame.com for the three people who want to get those graded. CDI, 3DO, what we don't grade. Video game systems, video game accessories. Video game Affirma, magazines, paperwork, etc. Video game trophies and miscellanea. They don't grade for AES, CDI Longbox, Sega Pico. I wouldn't think about that ever. And big box PC games. Oversized games they can't grade are like NES Arkanoid, Carmen San Diego, Stack Up. I guess they don't have cases for it. They don't have the ability yet.
Right.
Super Nintendo Earthbound. So anything out of the ordinary set. So, yeah. So I do like the idea in theory. I hate the idea of grading cartridge-only stuff. I cannot tell you how much that is going to bother me if that actually becomes a thing. Because what's going to happen is people think it's going to automatically raise the value.
Sure.
For people, if I get a Super Mario 3, I can buy one on eBay for $15. Or I can spend $80 on one. And the cost to grade it's probably going to be like, I don't know, in between that. So they're going to know there's going to be an instant profit markup on it. Which is why I don't like, in theory, grading sealed games anyway. Because there's this automatic assertion of value because it's graded.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. They're filling a need. You'll have to see what the market does.
I'm going to see. I don't think there's a need to grade, unless it's like a one of a kind item or two of a kind item. You want to certify an NWC cart, that's fine. You want to start doing that for like little Samsons. I think that's sort of pointless to me. You know, when there's so many of them compared to like other items.
But. Yeah, I mean, with loose ones, that's definitely a spot where I'm a little more.
But I wish them luck. At least they're going to get feedback from the community, right?
I mean, I think I'm like 80% pretty much in their court on all of this. The loose stuff, that's going to be a little
dicey. They have examples. You can see a Zelda Link to the Past in a case, and it's like, all right, can I take it out at least? Water resistant, UV protected. That's like the other ones. Locked systems. They're secured with six locking tabs. Okay. I mean, I have no problem buying them just to have them if you can take the game out. I really don't.
Right.
Tamper evident. Oh. You can destroy the holder themselves to take them out. Oh. Okay. And they're going to be at certification debuts at C2E2. What is that? Is that an event?
Yeah.
I never heard of that. Where is that one at?
It's every year.
Chicago.
Yeah, it's Chicago.
And it's like a CES sort of thing?
It's comics and something.
Chicago Comic and Entertainment Expo. So they'll be there April 6th to 8th when I'll be at, oh, I'll be at PAX East that weekend. Interesting. Same weekend. Not a good weekend for that.
I mean, honestly, overall, I wish them luck. I just, sure. I think this is a hole that needs to be filled. And I'm certainly.
And I hope it shuts up the people like that were going out yelling about me and Ian. Like, well, this is the problems we've had for this for like 10 years.
Oh, I'm not unreasonable. My problem with VCS. Yeah, I have I personally have a weird thing with grading games. It strikes me as odd. But as I've gotten older, the grading of things in general has bothered me less. And I think.
Well, it never caught on. It's very niche.
Sure, but as I've gotten older, just in general, the grading of things in general, it bothers me less. It bothers me less with video games. And like I said, VGC wasn't ever going away, which in my mind, just look, we can argue about that all we want, but really all the only solution to it was to create a better VGC, better grading, a better service
with people that we actually know these people and can contact them and have standards and practices and objective qualifications for what's a 7 versus 8 versus 9 versus 10, which I always said I don't know what a fucking 90 versus 85 versus 80 is. I don't know what that means.
We're finally going to get something like that as opposed to everything being very good 85 plus.
Best of luck. Street Fighter series in development, Ian.
So we've got a Street Fighter TV series in development. Stop making noises, Pat. It's going to be based on the Street Fighter 2 story arc. It's to follow Ryu, Ken, Guile, and Chun-Li. And they're going to take down M. Bison. It's going to be live action.
They're going to take down M. Bison.
Yep. It's going to be live action. And I honestly don't feel like it's going to do very well.
Why not?
As much as I like fighting games and I like the silly stories attached to fighting games, I just don't see the Street Fighter one adapting. Particular, because when I think about it, here's the stupid part. When I think about it, for as maligned as the Street Fighter 2 movie was, it's kind of certain shots could be done better, special effects, acting, but it's kind of the best case scenario of how that story can be done.
Yes, just because you have, unlike something like Mortal Kombat, which is more directly tied into Bruce Lee movies in particular.
A lot more characters, a lot more silliness already inherent in that game going on, where you can just do a whole lot more stupid shit with it.
Mm-hmm.
The storyline especially in that, they're doing the World Warrior stuff because that's what everyone knows.
Well, no one gives a shit about Street Fighter 1.
Well, no, but they're doing the World Warrior stuff because that's what everyone knows.
Oh, yeah.
But the storyline gets way crazier in later Street Fighter stuff, but everyone knows Street Fighter 2, but that storyline is so simplistic that if that's what you're going to do, honestly, on paper, the Street Fighter 2 movie did it.
Yeah, and then the cartoon series, which you can say did a great job of translating over as much as they could for kids in the 90s. So it's four protagonists, just like the fucking movie, Ryu, Ken, Guile, and Chun-Li.
They
take down M. Bison, the evil mastermind who runs Shadaloo, against a fucking cartoon, a global criminal organization. Though on different journeys, our heroes' paths will cross as they are drawn into the World Warrior Tournament, a competition devised by M. Bison to find the most powerful and capable fighter in the world. And that's a real difference. The movie didn't really focus on the tournament too much.
No,
it was just more like the secret missions and shit, right? So that's they did the anime movie was supposedly. Did a decent job, right?
Yeah. I mean,
notable for freaking Chun-Li bathing. That's what it's known for.
I mean, so, okay, you add more fighting into this, but I still feel like what we're going to get is sort of just a more serious version of a storyline that you can't really write that many ways.
No. Did you see the Assassin's Fist thing from a few years ago?
No.
That they did?
Uh-uh.
So this is the team behind that. And this was on, where did this premiere? I remember watching it a little bit, I thought. It was a web series. And I guess for a web series, it was pretty good. I think I watched it originally. Yeah, there was a short film, Street Fighter Legacy. It was like 3 minutes. It shows Ryu and Ken fighting, and the effects are good. The martial arts are really good. Yeah, I did see this. I did see this short fan film. Yeah.
So it's odd. I mean, I generally like Street Fighter games more than, you know, Mortal Kombat games, but the Mortal Kombat series was a far more interesting concept to me than
the TV series.
Yeah,
I never saw that. It was at least being like a TNT or something.
No,
or
I think
was that on?
No, I thought it was web only.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
I thought there was a TV series though.
Oh, I don't know.
There was. I think it was like TNT, like the late 90s, early 2000s.
Oh, I'm talking about the web only series. One okay. That they were doing. Yeah. This, I kind of feel like that, you know, maybe it was probably better left maybe to a goofier interpretation, even if that was perhaps not the intent.
Sure. So this is, I'm watching the trailer for the Assassin's Fist one. So if it's the same team doing it, I mean, the martial arts has to be good. Obviously, you need portrayals. You need some sort of budget that works. And again, martial arts movies, it's always a little simpler, the budget.
Yeah.
We don't need a lot. Then with Hadoukens, I think that's easy. You can do that in After Effects nowadays. Most of these effects, you know, are doable for on the cheap.
Yeah.
They're like stock, a lot of these things.
So, I mean, I'd check it out. I don't have any high hopes about it for it, you know.
Sure. And then I guess what would they do for the second season? Would they do Street Fighter 3? What would they do?
I have no idea.
See, everyone knows the story of Street Fighter 1, Ryu beats Sagat.
Yeah.
Street Fighter 2, what's the official story? Is it just Chun-Li beat M. Bison? Is that the official story for the second one? Right. Is there official? You know how in Mortal Kombat there's officially stories?
You fucking got me. I don't know. I actually follow the King of Fighters and the Mortal Kombat stories more than I do the Street Fighter stories.
Who won Street Fighter 2? I'm looking that up right now. What's the official canon? There has to be an official canon, right? Guile won the second one. He was going to kill Bison, so they went for that ending. Okay, and his wife stopped him. So that's the official story. I thought they had Chun-Li win. All right. So, all right. I didn't know Guile won Street Fighter 2. So that's the ending, and when you're playing it officially,
there you go.
You should play Guile and get that ending when she says, no, don't do it. You're a man that I love. You can't be murdering someone. All right, this is going to be, when is this coming out? I don't fucking know. It's coming out.
Check your local TV listings.
Check your local internet for time and station channel, whatever. Blue Apron. We love the Blue Apron. We love the Apron of Blue. It's the leading meal kit delivery service in the U.S. What do you like about Blue Apron, Ian?
Well, it's convenient. The food comes to you fresh, locally sourced.
Locally, the recipes are delicious. So they give you all you needed to cook, the exact amount, everything.
Tell us about those dumplings you made, Pat.
No, the hoisin chicken steam buns.
Ah, yes.
Delicious. And it tasted like something from a restaurant.
Absolutely.
I always talk about those that Asian fusion pork meal I had that I could not have made without BlueApron.com. You can get a two-person meal plan. It serves two people. You can get two or three recipes a week. But you also get the family meal plan, which I did because I'm a little bit larger. Serves four people. You can choose from four new recipes, and then you can choose to receive either two or three or four recipes any week. Wow, you can get all four? That's a huge family.
It is.
If you get all, these are big servings.
Yeah, they're pretty giant.
The family one says it's like four servings. I usually make that six or seven at times. I split that up. Make it last.
Depending on how the servings are portioned, it's easy to make that more than four.
It's convenient. There's a ton of variety every week. There's usually like one chicken, one beef, one vegetarian option.
A fish, sometimes.
Some sort of fish of some sort that's hanging out in the river there, waiting for Blue Apron to come and snag him out of the river there. There's up to 12 new recipes each week offered. You can pick two, three, or four. You can skip weeks. You don't have to do it if one week. If you're going to a convention, you're rooming with Ian, you hear me singing in the shower, then you don't want Blue Apron that weekend. But the next weekend, you're going to want it. So CU Podcast listeners can get $30 off your first order if you go to blueapron.com/CU Podcast. You can check out this week's menu. And again, $30 off blueapron.com/CU Podcast. It's good food. It's convenient. It doesn't take you. Some recipes are like 25 minutes. Some are 45 minutes. Some might get up to an hour if you don't know how to, you know, crush garlic properly like me and press and know how to do the lemon wedge thing the way you're supposed to. But if you're experienced at all, you'll be quicker.
Okay. Get a box of Tasty.
And Blue Apron is a better way to cook. Ian, we have the Patreon topic poll, and we won out here. This won out with 49% of the vote. Do you want to get into it?
Yeah. So
about the this is console setup services that exist.
Yeah. So I've seen these before. This was asked. This was a topic suggestion that was brought up a while back, and we threw it into our vote for a topic poll on our Patreon, which is at patreon.
It's, he never gets it right.
It's CU Podcast. It's patreon.com/CU Podcast. Fuck. Can't think. My brain is absolutely on fire right now. Right. Yes. And, you know, there you can do a voting.
there you get other. You get first access to this. If you're watching this now, you're seeing it first. What?
Do a vote.
And there's a Discord chat in there as well. Anyways.
This is about, I've seen them in the U.S. I've seen them at places like Best Buy. I'm trying to remember where else I'd seen them. Maybe
Turn
even possibly at Circuit City when they were around.
Best Buy.
But it was brought to our attention that it's happening over in Europe as well. This is, so stores will offer a Geek Squad type service to you. I think it was Geek Squad who was actually the company that I saw offering it at Best Buy.
All right, I walk into a Best Buy. And I buy, let's just say, a Wii U or a Switch.
Or a Switch, or let's just use Xbox One.
By the way, I haven't found my Switch yet after I moved. I can't find it.
I don't. You're ridiculous.
I don't know where it is.
So, there are these services that will, you know, try to scare parents, essentially, with, oh, did you know that these systems will need an update before you can use it? Or, you know, you'll need to connect this to your Wi-Fi and this, that, and the next thing. And they'll use
scare tactics.
Yeah, these terms to, you know, kind of scare you into thinking that, you know, it might be hard to set it up, or your kid or your wife or your husband might not be able to use their device right away when they get it on Christmas. Ridiculous. And they literally try, like this one right here, the sign that they sent us shows, the console setup service from LoveTech will only free delivery will only run you 69 euros.
69 what?
Euros.
Which is like 80 something dollars?
Yeah. And I think it was like running like 60 or 70 in the US when I saw the sign.
69 euros is $85. Oh, my Pat Math was on.
So these people want to fleece you for $85 to pull the system out of a box, hook it up to their store internet, and press start.
And they ask you, hey, what's your Wi-Fi code? Which is what you'd do anyway when you're setting it up.
Well, I mean, you would do that at home. So, like, this one is doing, because they're saying free delivery is
LoveTech.
They are literally hooking it up to the store internet, downloading the update, which takes anywhere from an hour, half an hour to 3 hours, depending on, you know, what system it is. Putting it back in the box, and then delivering it to you for $85.
But then you still have to set it up at your place.
Set
up your Wi-Fi and do all that. So they're not really saving you that much time.
No.
They're saving that because in those 3 hours, you would have done it yourself. You would have done the updates yourself.
Yep.
They're saving you absolutely zero time they're saving you.
Except for the update. Yeah.
But but the time for them to do the update, that you don't have the console.
Right.
So there's no time saved.
Well, except for you don't have to sit there and wait for the update to download for 3 hours.
Okay.
Right. That's it. Which, I mean, when we sell these things, the easy thing to do...
Oh, my fucking God.
And lots of people, lots of stores do this, is you just say, hey, if you're getting this for someone for Christmas, hook it up the night before. Download that update. And the ones that Geek Squad will actually like come over and be like, yeah, we'll, you know.
Oh, they'll actually come over.
I've seen, the one that I saw at Best Buy, I'm pretty sure, said that they would come over and hook it up and, you know, put the Wi-Fi on, which is also hand-holdingly simple on like all these modern
systems.
Well,
yeah, because people do it with
their
phones.
Put your password
and iPads,
here.
It's the same shit.
Okay, you're done.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it.
Find your network. Maybe that's your dead cat.
We are, yeah.
That I love so much.
We are, okay, we're going to download an update. Don't touch anything. Just walk away until it says we're done. Okay, now play your game.
So, Geek Squad, it's $99 You can add it to the cart, I guess, when you buy your console.
Are you serious? Geek Squad is charging $100?
In-home, it's in-home gaming console and virtual reality setup. Sit back and let a Geek Squad agent set up your gaming console, including online accounts, parental controls, and necessary updates. After completing your order, you'll receive a confirmation email that contains a redemption code. You can then schedule your appointment by calling 1-800-GEEK-SQUAD. Please print your Geek Squad confirmation email and be ready when the agent arrives at your chosen location. Because that's what I want in my house. Because the overall customer rating, 3.6 stars. Only 60% would recommend. Ooh.
Yeah, I mean, because...
Let's see some of the reviews. Oh, God.
I know that people are afraid of tech. And I know that there are people who think they can't do it. But everyone knows... Everyone who's buying one of these, if they don't know how to do it, knows someone who can do it for them in 5 minutes.
This review. Only hooked it up! Of course, miles may vary based upon your Geek Squad member.
Right.
He came into the home, attached the correct cords, and started downloading a game while spending 20 minutes texting his friends. Did not provide any insight that would help me learn to use the device at all. Just stated, do this, then this, and figured I knew what this was. When asked to help me learn it, he answered, well, if you have a 10-year-old grandkids, they'll know.
Oh my god. Yeah, if you had 10-year-old grandkids, you could have saved the entire...
Isn't that funny, though, is that we went from the generation, like half the first generation didn't have home consoles. So maybe... But we didn't have experience with TV, so maybe we can hook it up with our parents, or we can do it ourselves. Now they think that people can't do this anymore, but we've been around... Now we're in parenting age. We know how to do this shit.
Right.
We grew up with computers. So how many people actually need this service? You're talking like a very small... pie portion of the population. I want cherry.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I feel like that's why it's so expensive. You know, for every person they fleece on this, they feel like they have to get as much money as possible out of it.
All right. You want to talk about Daniel Bryan being cleared to return to wrestling?
You can.
Daniel Bryan's cleared to return to wrestling.
Woo!
Well, he was cleared for at least like a fucking year and a half by his own medical team and other specialists. For some reason, WWE wouldn't clear him forever.
Right.
So I guess he repleaded his case. And this is the timing's strange. Obviously, it's WrestleMania. But he announced it. It was awesome on SmackDown. It was obviously the best SmackDown in probably a year since they had a shift in the creative team when SmackDown was head and shoulders above Raw forever when I told you about that. Now it's just the same product almost entirely, just shorter. And he came back and said, yeah, I'm going to be returning. I don't know when, but I'm going to be doing that. And then this built into the great storyline. The main storyline SmackDown for the past 6 months has been Shane McMahon versus Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn having a rivalry. And Daniel Bryan being in the middle, sort of being like, okay, you can't be totally unfair to these two guys. You can't fire him. So he's kind of like sticking up for these guys who are his friends, you know, from back in the day. But he's also in charge of SmackDown. So he's like, it's a really decent storyline for what it is. And so, but they attacked Shane last week in the storyline, and then now they announced he actually really has diverticulitis.
Yeah.
I can't say the damn word. Fuck. He has the thing in his intestines that almost killed Brock Lesnar.
Yes.
So it's kind of weird about what's going on with him, really. Diverticulitis. There it is. So, but it was a feeling, though, that something was brewing with this, that they were going to build towards... Shane and Daniel Bryan tag teaming against Owens and Zayn in WrestleMania, which would be huge. Just have Bryan back. So the end of SmackDown was fucking amazing because Bryan comes out, he brings out Zayn and Owens. He says, "You guys, it was for you guys. We've known each other forever. Why did you attack Shane?" He said, "I have to fire you." He said, "This isn't forever." He said, "I've been fired from the company twice." And then, of course, they attack him. But then when Bryan gets fired up, and in his jeans and his you know his work clothes, it was like it instantly came back to holy shit, the crowd went nuts.
Oh,
with nice. The yes chants when he started laying in the kicks and doing the running corner drop kicks. It was like nothing. There was like no time in between the past 2 years when he had to retire. You know, it was incredible. It's a game changer, him being able to wrestle again. For not just the reasons where people will give a shit about WWE as much, because no one gives a shit about Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar for like the fucking third time or whatever, many times. No one gives a shit.
Right.
It's dead in the water. But if Bryan works his way back to wrestling, AJ Styles, Samoa Joe, Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn and Shinsuke Nakamura. Like, holy shit, now you have all these dream matches that you could do. Or, which I want him to do, his contract's up in September, he goes to New Japan at that point.
Right.
And then that would put... New Japan is starting to get rising popularity more and more, but if they get Daniel Bryan as a roster guy, fucking forget it. They can put up shows in the U.S. every other month if they wanted to do that Daniel Bryan. So it's very exciting. I'm so happy for him because he's wanted to do this, and supposedly he's been cleared by fucking everyone. So it's not like the risk isn't any greater than what it was. You know what I mean? At this point.
Right.
So he passed the test. I don't know why WWE didn't want to clear him. Maybe they thought that, well, he would take shine off of their golden boy, Roman Reigns, probably, like he did in the past.
There's probably a good chance of that. I think they probably realized, I mean, there was a lot of rumors that he was, you know, one way or another, he was going to wrestle again, whether it was with them or not. So
they might as well let him do it before he leaves. Right. He basically said, I'm going to be wrestling again no matter what.
Right.
If not for WWE, he said
that. So, I mean, I think for them, they realized it was...
Let's make some money off of this.
Yeah, they probably were doing it because they were being, you know...
Yeah, there was no chance of him sticking around at all. As in the GM role. He has no interest in that.
Yeah.
You know.
So, you know, they probably were holding back a little bit for trying to get Reigns, you know, to part of that push maybe. And then they realized that, well, maybe we should actually let the guy that people like wrestle.
Let's let the most popular wrestler in the world wrestle.
I mean, and I
because he's cleared.
I need to clarify that, you know, because I think people took it as me being way negative. Obviously, if the guy wants to wrestle, I want him to wrestle. And yeah, I do worry about him because I'm sick of seeing so many of these wrestlers broken when they get to, you know, 50. But if he wants to wrestle, let him wrestle. I'm happy he's back. I'm happy he can do what he wants.
He can wrestle a safer style.
Yeah, I would like him to. That, I mean, that's
submission-based style.
That's where I'm going. You know, I'd like him to wrestle a safer style.
No more fucking dumbass. They should ban the fucking suicide dive. Every fucking match now on Raw, they do a suicide dive.
Jesus.
That's how Ryan got fucked up once. That's how Lita, I think, got fucked up once. Other people got fucked up hitting their heads with that stupid move. It's just dumb. Your feet get tied up in the ropes and you take a header. I think it's happened to Sasha Banks. Like I think I saw like a month or two back it happened.
Right. But, you know, we'll ban all of these moves that, you know, haven't
really killed anyone. Pile driver never really killed anyone.
No.
Stone Cold, that was not a proper pile driver, though, with Owen Hart. But, like, that's a dangerous move.
Yeah, there are certain issues that, you know, I mean, power bombs, pile drivers, you know, they look rough. You don't want people emulating
always
that.
Doing them all the time. Sure.
But how much damage have they actually caused over time? Mm-hmm. I don't know. But you look at something like the suicide dive and the injury rate.
Diving headbutts.
Yeah, diving headbutts.
That Dynamite Kid did, and he's fucked up. Benoit, we know that.
Yeah.
Daniel Bryan did the diving headbutt. I think they banned that. I think they just said, yeah, that's not ever happening again.
Yeah.
Stuff where your head's diving at someone and you can't really protect your head.
But the curb stomp, you know, got banned and it's like...
They brought it back. I don't know why they didn't ban that, but they brought it back.
Yeah, they banned it because it's like, that's like an incredibly soft move.
It's a soft pedigree.
Yeah.
That's exactly what that move is.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. You know, but they need Daniel Bryan. The faces in the WWE are so weak and weird.
Mm-hmm.
Seth Rollins is a great worker. Fantastic. Never mind the fact that he killed Sting's career or helped to, but he's a boring face. You don't want to root for him.
No.
Dean Ambrose, they.
I thought Dean Ambrose was
he was going to be the next big thing.
They ruined him.
They made him bland and boring and weird instead of being like a rowdy Roddy Piper character. They made
which
him into
is
like
totally
a,
what he should have been.
They made him to his weird ass, weird psychopath, but not really psycho. Just a goofy guy. And then obviously Reigns never worked and never will work. And then you have Daniel Bryan.
Yeah.
Who's everyone fucking loves because they should love him. Because he's genuinely the nicest guy in the world. Wish me a happy birthday. Didn't have to when I saw him those years back. And you can tell he loves wrestling.
Like, yes.
When he does his promos, he's not putting on a character.
No.
He's not acting, which is what most they should be promoting that, which is why New Japan is so beloved, because for the most part, those are extension of those guys' personalities. You know, the warrior spirit. You see some of those guys like, yeah, those guys would kill me in real life. And that's how they wrestle. And that's why there's a connection to guys like Goto or Suzuki, you know, guys that were mixed martial arts guys that could kill you. Like, and they look like psychopaths because they partially are.
Right.
You know. So anyway, speaking of that real quick, they had New Japan return to Long Beach yesterday. Excellent card. The Golden Lovers match versus the Young Bucks was amazing.
Nice.
I've seen it noted as 5 stars. It is, I would say, a 5-star tag match, and those are hard to do for a tag match. And I recommend everyone checking that out. All right, Ian, it's time now for the Patreon live voice Q&A.
Woo.
Patreon.com/CUpodcast. You can call in and leave us a comment or question. And here's the first one here.
Hey, Pat, Ian, how's it going? It's me, Rashid, from Dubai. Love the new studio, by the way. My question is, when you guys started collecting, what self-made rules you followed when you collect? For example, for me, when I started collecting my DS and 3DS game, I made a rule that I will not buy any game that I personally will not be interested in playing, even if I get to play it or not. Let's say there is a limited edition of said game, and I really want to get that. So if I don't really like the game, I will not buy it. You collect for so many systems. What kind of rules will you make to make it easier or satisfying for yourself when you collect? That's my question. Thank you guys as always.
Yeah. Hi, Rashid. When I first started collecting, that was kind of the problem. I actually didn't set any rules for myself. That's how I kind of burned out on it. I was, you know, mostly focusing on original Nintendo, and I kind of went into it with the loose idea that I wanted a full set. So I just started buying and buying and buying. And as I did that, I was getting into Genesis and really just picking up anything video game related. It wasn't that big of a deal until I moved out to San Diego, and I just realized, you know, that I had kind of collected myself into a corner, and I got rid of a lot of stuff. And then obviously with that comes the regret of getting rid of certain things. So sure. When I started collecting, when I got back into collecting again, maybe about 10, 12 years ago with the PC Engine. And then, you know, when I started buying up more black and white Game Boy games again, maybe about 8 years ago, I kind of went with really stricter rules, like kind of like you said. I only buy the games that I'm interested in. With black and white Game Boy, I'm getting stricter. Only loose copies with a select few. So only loose, and for the most part, only gray cartridges. So that my collection doesn't get out of hand. With PC Engine, except for rare exceptions, nothing loose. And at this point, I don't look at any TurboGrafx stuff, only PC Engine, because TurboGrafx stuff is too expensive.
Okay. My rule is, do I have it or not? That's
yeah, I was going to say, I don't think Pat has any rules.
Thanks for the question, Rashid. Next.
Hey, Pat and Ian. This is Elvis Sanchez from New York, also known as MechaDragon101 on Twitter. I didn't know that this tier actually let me do Patreon questions on calls. I just signed up for this for video podcast. This is great. I guess my question is, what are some games that you play that when you feel kind of sad or you just want to relax? My grandma kind of recently passed away, so I need to find some kind of like new game that could help me like get over that. Yeah, it's kind of sad. I'm starting to feel it now, but I'm driving on now. But thank you so much. I hope that I can meet you again in another convention soon. Thanks, guys. Have a good day.
It's MechaDragon on Twitter. So any games that you play when you're sad?
Hey, Elvis. Actually, yeah, I do have an answer for that. For me, it's games with a lot of grinding. RPGs in particular. Like Pokemon or any like first person dungeon crawlers, like Etrian Odysseys or, you know, the old Dungeons and Dragons, like, you know, Eye of the Beholder type games, really do it for me. I actually find it calming and relaxing and it helps me zone out. Sorry to hear about your grandmother. When my grandmother passed away, actually, about 3.5 years ago, that's actually what I did. I played a ton of Etrian Odyssey when I couldn't stop thinking about it. I actually played a ton of Etrian Odyssey and just grinded. and you know, the music was very calm, and even though the game was very hard, the constant repetition just kind of helped me zone out.
Games I play when I'm sad. I usually don't play video games when I'm sad, because I don't know. I don't know if it would change my mood too much. When I was a kid, I'd play, yeah, because I was bullied a lot, and you know, I have stories about that where, yeah, I would play maybe whatever I had to take my mind off it. But nowadays, I guess as an adult, when I'm sad, I don't want me to infect the video game. Does that make sense? I want it to be separated from that.
It's like mixing work with pleasure or something like that. You don't want to associate sadness with games.
Yeah. Same reason I don't drink when I'm sad, because when I drink, I'm usually in a good mood already, or, you know, hanging out with someone of the fairer sex. And so I don't want to drink when I'm sad, because it makes it worse. So I guess in theory, though, when you're playing a game, it should make you happier by default because you're enjoying it. But I don't know. It kind of scares me.
I don't play them because I use something like that as it's neither here nor there in terms of enjoyment for me. It's simply just
take your mind off it. Okay, maybe that's the difference. I don't play games that necessarily be distracted.
Right. See, and that's the thing. Like, it's not every single game. I couldn't use any type of game to do it. It has to be something like that that's repetitive, and kind of calming like that.
We'll do one more. Or go to one more Q&A.
One more of those, and then I gotta.
You don't want to do the other topic with me? Big one, the site imploding. I'll do it myself.
Right. Yeah, I don't have time.
Hi, Pat and Ian. Quick question for you: do you see retro plug and play consoles like the SNES, NES Mini, or the At Games consoles being threatened by the Raspberry Pi and its ease of burning whole catalogs of ROMs onto a micro SD card? By the way, this is Sean Sitch from Youngstown, Ohio.
You know, it's from Youngstown, Ohio. Ed O'Neill is from Youngstown, Ohio. He references that in Married Children once.
Oh.
He does.
Hi, Sean.
Can I answer one of these questions for once? It's not a threat, and this is why. The vast majority of people don't need entire catalogs of games like us insane people to have access to. Most people are satisfied with a dozen games, a handful of games, a game they remembered as a kid. That's why the NES Classic, when they bring it back, will sell out. That's why the Super Nintendo Classic sold a ton, because you don't need to. Most of us aren't these hardcore retro gamers that need everything. We just need what we enjoy, what we play every now and then. We're not playing every day. Maybe we're just playing on the weekend or just with our kids every now and then. So, no, it hasn't, I don't think. The flashbacks have been made forever.
Yeah.
They've been made for over 10 years at this point, right? 12 years.
Flashbacks have been coming up forever, and the Super Nintendo Mini and the NES Mini came out long after everyone knew. Well, everyone who wants to know or will probably know that you can do these sorts of things with the Raspberry Pi. The reason why these are going to stay successful forever is they're relatively reasonably priced, meaning that they, for what they are, they could almost be considered impulse purchases. Some of these things, like some of the flashbacks, I mean, you literally can find in drugstores.
Yeah.
You know, you're walking down the aisle and it's like, oh,
impulse buy.
Hey, that looks like, you know, the Atari I had when I was a kid, and it's $50. And look, it has three of my favorite games on it. And boy, howdy, me and my friend, or me and my sister, or me and whoever can sit down for 4 hours and have fun. And even if they never use it again, that's fine.
And I don't have to spend an hour to research RetroPies, learn how to do it, and say, oh, it's easy. It's easy to you. It's not easy to your Aunt Tilda out there how to do it.
Right.
Or your Uncle Bobby. It's not the easiest thing in the world.
So, you know, I mean, and that's plenty of us, plenty of video game collectors and us. I mean, lots of us have gone out and bought the NES and SNES minis, full well knowing that we could do this on a Raspberry Pi. Why? Because they're cute.
Yeah.
They're well made. They're an official product by a company that, you know, some of us really like. So, you know, we buy them. There's always going to be room for something like that, I think.
Thanks for the question. You can go to patreon.com/CU podcast, and we have different tiers up. We have exclusive clips every now and then. You have access to the Discord that Ian's been popping up in, Discord chat as well. And Ian's going to do a Google Hangout.
Yeah, sure.
Maybe this weekend or the week after.
this weekend.
We'll see about that. And that's it for Ian's part of the podcast. He wants to, he's got to take off for work. I'm going to address a Q&A, though.
This yeah, is, let's nail it. I want to hear some of this. I may have to run in the middle.
All right. This is from at Keeping Up Gaming. There's always been behind-the-scenes drama at That Guy with the Glasses / Channel Awesome, but it's increased tenfold recently. Linkara just left, and other producers are dropping like flies. Channel Awesome looks like it's on the verge of collapsing. Okay. Channel Awesome / That Guy with the Glasses. Big site. It got big 2009 about. It was known for producing and helping people like Angry Joe, Linkara, Cinema Snob, Nostalgia Chick, Lindsay Ells, who's no longer on the site. Linkara just left. It's known primarily for Doug Walker, Nostalgia Critic. Benzai was on the site, I think, at one point. It had Blistered Thumbs, which was an offshoot video game website, which failed miserably. And I can talk about that a little bit. But there's always been our dear past friend, Justin Juario, was a member of the site for years as well, and others. There's been a lot of people that came up there. Spoonie was a big get for them back in the day. He was big before then, but it helped him out at some point. Transparency real quick. I applied to go on that site in 2009 after the Russian attack video. Did not hear back for like 4 or 5 months. Tried again and got an email from Rob Walker, which is Doug's brother, basically saying, not good enough, try again later. And I replied back saying, this is the best you're going to get from me, so take it or leave it. And that was that.
Wow.
Was the most professional email back to me, because it was like, oh, I thought, basically the tone was, well, I thought we rejected you already, which I never heard back. And so I was kind of like put off by the response. It wasn't professional. But I didn't take it too personally, because in the years after, people were saying like Justin or Benzai or Spoonie was like, they rejected you. They're like, why did they do that? And I was like, I don't know. So this isn't sour grapes, though. I'm not trying to kick dirt on the grave of Channel Awesome, but it hasn't been relevant for 5 years at this
point.
Well,
I was going to... So all I can really say about this before I take off is I was interested to hear about this. Because I don't...
What was this? This was everyone behind the scenes talking about the unprofessionalism of Mike Michaud running the website, which that's been known for years.
Sure.
There was an exodus a few years ago with Obscurus, Lupa, and Phaelis, and other people that said, yeah, this is not run professionally. There's a bunch of clicks here. We're not told what's going on. We feel disconnected. We're told what to do when we shouldn't be.
When a site gets big enough that... And unorganized enough that it seems like from reading that there are clicks within a click.
Yeah, it's not good.
That seems to be like that's a recipe for disaster. So I don't follow a lot of this stuff. This to me says this to me says how bad the situation must have been, because this happened like 4 years ago there, right?
Yeah, it happened originally. Now it's happening again.
Because I thought it was already done.
No.
And then all of a sudden it comes back up again. And I'm reading through it.
Sometimes people feel empowered when a few people do it, but then maybe they think of the time. I hate to say there's selfishness involved. And by the way, I have nothing but love for certain people that have been on the site. Obviously, Linkara.
I was very nice guy. He was very nice. Yeah.
Brad from Cinema Snob. I've spoken to him. Nice guy. Spoonie in the past, I spoke to, was a nice guy. I haven't spoken to him in years. I wish him the best. I don't know what's going on with him at this point, honestly. Other people. But there was always a feeling of cliquishness. I'll never forget a MAGFest, real quick story, a MAGFest where Justin's trying to introduce me to, the group is there hanging out as a clique, which is what they did. If you're on Channel Awesome, you were a clique, which I can't stand. That's how it was. Let's put it this way.
That was the last thing I was going to say. I've never seen or met really any of them at any other convention.
There used to be big, they used to all go to MAGFest, for example.
Okay.
So I probably would have dropped off the site after I joined, because I don't get involved with click shit or drama or that high school shit. But anyway, when he tried to introduce me to people from Channel Awesome, and Justin's was older than all of us. Justin, when he passed away, was like 40.
Right.
So he was like 10 years, at least 10 to 15 years older than most of the people on Channel Awesome. He was like the paternal figure. So he's beyond this bullshit. He tried to introduce me to two people from Channel Awesome. I won't say who. They couldn't pretend to care to say hi to someone that wasn't on their website. That even their friend Justin was introducing them to. They basically were like, yeah. And like, that was it. I was like, oh, well, I feel like I can't even stand here. then. This is how this is. This is what this type of people. So picture,
I've met people like that.
But picture that. Picture that, though. That is the foundation of a quote-unquote professional website. And then when the, behind the scenes, the people don't know how to run good business, don't know how to communicate with people. The story with Obscura's Luba being tossed off the site was like, there was like a group meeting. She didn't respond. She was away from the computer for 15 minutes. And that was it. She was tossed off. Well, you're gone from the site. Obviously, you can't pay attention. That's real fucking professional to do stuff like that and run a website.
Jesus.
Allegedly. So the point is not everyone's leaving and everyone's like, oh, this is an awful place. So my question is, I'm not going to get into the people that are either still there, not going to judge them, or why they didn't leave earlier. I think Linkar put out a nice message saying, I didn't think it was this bad, or I think he said something like, I thought I could help improve it, and I was wrong. That's fine. I'm going to take his word for it. But I don't. This really tarnishes Doug's reputation a lot. There's no way he didn't know this shit was going on.
Sure.
He's not one running it all behind the scenes, but there's no way he didn't know about this shit. And there are stories about him mismanaging all those team-up movies that they filmed, didn't know what they were doing.
Reading about that.
Deleting
like
footage,
nightmare.
Keeping people in attics for the whole day where they didn't have to shoot. I'm like, if I was around that, I'd be like, what the fuck is going on? Can I go outside?
I was reading that, and I want to know, who the fuck agreed to that?
It sounds like the fucking room. How this is being made. That's what it sounds like.
But I mean, at what point do you just go, this is fucking ridiculous, I'm getting up and walking away?
And people were afraid to, because it was like, I don't want to use the C word, like a cult, but it sounds like you were afraid of losing your position on this website. There was like an upper tier and a lower tier. And the problem, this all started to get bad when Doug retired and killed off Nostalgia Critic character. From reports, he didn't tell the rest of the people on the website he was doing that.
I saw that.
That's where a ton of traffic came on that filtered down to the lower, lesser known,
well,
lesser
it's
known
content
creators.
Probably what would have made being part of it a bit tantalizing would have been getting that.
Get the rub.
Right.
It's like being a lower card wrestler or mid card wrestler. And then your biggest star says, yeah, I'm leaving right now, guys. You're like, oh, okay, no one's going to watch our stuff anymore.
Right.
Or partially. And then there was demands not to have Patreons. You can't put a Patreon in the links to your video and all this. It's like, who the fuck are you to tell me to do this? Am I under contract on here that I can't do this stuff?
This is gross. It's gross.
But you got to go.
That's gross. But I got
to
go.
So to finish up with Ian Pax, it's just, to me, it's sad, but it's also we're in a different time where these team-up websites don't really matter as much anymore and haven't for years. And that includes even a site I used to help run Retroware, where there was a reason for them to exist at one point before YouTube became better established with MCNs and partnering people. Now there's a much less of a reason to put yourself on these team-up websites and to go forward because they can't provide you with that much like they used to. You know,
it's a fun little family sort of deal, but
yeah, it's fun to be. It's always fun to be a part of a group,
right?
But I think you're better off just reaching out and not getting into these click situations and just talk to people that you like and network. I guess quote unquote normally, even though it could be naive. It's not always the easiest way to do it. I wish everyone well. There's tons of threads and tweets about this, about all the weird stuff that happened behind the scenes as Ian packs up and goes away. And should I do that Nintendo Toys one or wait for you next time the topic?
We can do that next time. That's
we'll do it next time. It's not a time sensitive topic. So Ian's packing up. We have a Patreon, patreon.com.
CUpodcast.com/patreon.
Yeah, reverse it. He's out the door. Did you call your Lyft already?
No, I'm doing it right now.
You gotta get your Vespa.
Yeah.
Yeah, guys, this has been a fun CU podcast. Check out that Wired article with me in it. Ian's quoted about how I never have fun in my life.
Nope.
I'm going to be at PAX East April. God, that's a week and a half from now. April 6th through 8th, I will be there. I have a panel on the 8th that Sunday morning at 11 a.m. It's about PC gaming and gaming in the 90s. I'll also be selling my book at the Screenwave Media booth there. Thanks so much for the support. If you want to advertise with us, shoot an email to cupodcast@thepunkeffect.com. Other than that, yeah, it's been fun here. And for Ian Ferguson, who's getting his lift,
woo!
I am Pat Contry. We will see you later.